and welcome back to the First Time Finished podcast. After a brief hiatus, the three of us have got back together. So as usual, I'm joined by Ninad and Ben, my fellow co-founders. How are you both?
Yeah, very well, thank you.
Yeah, doing good, Tom. Glad to be back from the brief hiatus. And yeah, glad to be kicking on with things again. Good to be here.
Busy footballing schedules. The world of football stops for no one, which kind of leads us on to our topic of conversation today. We're going to be looking at the Guardian's next gen list for 2004, with a brief mention of 2003 as well. And yet, rather than focusing on the players who made the list, we're going to be picking some uncovered gems who perhaps were overlooked by this illustrious list of players, and you know, shedding some light on what they have going forward and how they could rival the more illustrious 2004 names who've been picked by The Guardian. So first of all, I'm going to start with Ninad. Who have you chosen for your first selection today?
Well, our first selection comes from France, in Mohamed Ali Cho. Very, very interesting player. Before I talk about his player qualities, I just have to say this man has had an incredible journey. He was born in France and then immediately moved to England. And then I believe he then trained at Everton, at West Ham, and then briefly went back to France because of family reasons. Then he was at PSG for 4 years. Then later on, he had his youth spell at Everton, and now he's at Angers, if I pronounced that correctly. Yeah, he's at Angers, very exciting young player, 17 years old, born just inside 2004. So I was quite lucky in that happening. But yeah, he's pretty much one of the breakout stars in Ligue 1 this season. He's scored two goals this season. He's a striker, but I feel like he's more of a wide forward in more of the Rashford mold, if you will. He's got an incredible turn of pace. He dribbles really, really well. His first touch is solid. And then his work rate, his work rate off the ball and in terms of breaking, applying pressure on opposition defenses, it's a really, really important. It's an important part of his game. When you look at his numbers in sort of a small sample size, we have some numbers from StatsBomb via Football Reference. About 756 minutes of Ligue 1 football so far, he has averaged 22.87 pressures per 90, which places him in the top 3% of all top 5 league forwards. So that just tells you, how hard he works in terms of his defensive output. But also as an attacker, even though he hasn't had the greatest luck in terms of his output, one encouraging thing is that he is taking a very, very healthy number of shots. So he's averaging close to 3 shots per 90, which is 2.8, round off the free. And in terms of his expected goals, he's averaging about 0.45. So that is another healthy figure as well. It's encouraging for a young player to be able to amass these figures quite early on in their career. And he's probably not going to break the, double, he's not going to, maybe not going to score more than 10 goals this year, because he's still quite young. He's still learning his trade. But yeah, the signs are really positive with him. All the basics that you want to see in a player, in a wide forward, he has all of them. He's probably not the most creative, but it's maybe because he hasn't been given those responsibilities yet. So at Angers, he more likely features in a front two alongside Sofiane Boufal and in front of Angelo Fulghini, who's the sort of primary creative player. And yeah, he enjoys drifting out wide and attacking spaces in behind opposition lines, or creating those spaces himself by applying the pressure. So yeah, very exciting player, and yeah, someone to keep an eye on in the coming seasons.
Yeah, he sounds very exciting. Just having a look at his numbers, I see he's only he's only scored two league goals in his kind of 30 appearances. Do you put that down to a kind of an individual eccentricity in his play, a certain maverick quality, or is that the result of the system and the team he's playing in? And were he to develop into a better side, that would likely grow.
Yeah, I'll say it's a little bit of both of those things, but I'll also say that, you know, he's still really, really young, and he's still getting acclimatized to playing regular senior football at a very young age. Remember, this is a man that's just, you know, that's been moving countries left, right and center all throughout his career. And for him to have the opportunity to play senior football now, although he's relishing the opportunity, he's still learning to deliver on a regular basis. But what you have to say is that what's particularly impressive about him is that all the signs are positive, and in that the way he plays, the way he sort of attacks the opposition, the way he carries, and he's always very direct with his style of play. He's always looking to carry the ball further up the field and not really regressing in terms of, you know, his ability in possession. So yeah, all the sort of basic signs about him are really, really positive. And yeah, that's why I've picked him today.
I think as well, what we have to remember is he might have played 32 appearances, but last season he made 21 appearances and only played 324 minutes, which is only sort of 3.5 90s. So even though it looks like he's played a lot of games, he's played only a very few amount of minutes still in professional football.
Yeah, so last season was sort of his, I'd say he broke out into the first team last year, but this year he's sort of fully integrated into the starting 11. And I think we'll see a lot more of him as the season progresses, and he's probably going to pop up on a lot of graphics, player graphics for the rest of the season. And yeah, definitely, like I said, one player to keep an eye on.
Yeah, I think that's a very, that's a good point that Ben makes. And that's the kind of the sort of the nuanced kind of look that we have to take at these young players, is that they are so young and so raw, and they're ultimately being afforded, you know, relatively little amount of time to make these impressions that we're taking. So that can always skew the impression either negatively or positively. So that is a very good point. So Ben, talk us through your first selection of young talent.
I'm going to talk about Zalán Vanča, who is a Hungarian player playing for MTK Budapest, and he's quite an interesting player. He just switched agencies. He's now being represented by in Stella, the agency who represents Jack Grealish and Eduardo Camavinga and a bunch of other, Gareth Bale as well, I think. So a bunch of world-class players. And he's become the first Hungarian to be represented by this agency. And yeah, he's very highly rated in Hungary. He currently leads the UEFA Youth League goal scoring charts and has the most goal contributions. But he's also scored he's become the first Hungarian since 1960 to score as a 16-year-old in Hungary's top flight. He's also scored in the Hungarian Cup at senior level. He's been training with MTK since he was 14. And yeah, he's a very explosive, quick winger. He can score goals, as his goal scoring record would suggest. He can play either on the right or the left. I think what's most impressive is his recent performances at the UEFA Youth League, where MTK took on Sparta Prague, who are a very strong academy. I mean, we only have to look at their recent graduates in Adam Karabec, Martin Wittek, and obviously Adam Tozek. And MTK beat them quite comfortably. It was a 6-4 victory on aggregate, and Vanča was involved in all six of the goals, so he got four goals in that tie and two assists, and that's why he's leading the goal scoring. And the goal contribution charts in the UEFA Youth League because of those two games, essentially, back-to-back games. And yeah, he's regarded as one of Hungary's best talent at the moment. There's already talk about Red Bull Salzburg being interested. I think Basel made a move for him in the summer, which he rejected. And yeah, I really like him because he's a good presser. He's very fast and he's very gifted technically. He's a really agile dribbler. Like he's one-on-one, he normally beats his opposition defender.
That sounds really, really interesting. Do you think that the kind of the fact that his numbers are so impressive in kind of UEFA competition as well as domestic, do you think that that only kind of furthers the potential that the likes of you, Hungarian kind of football connoisseur, kind of see in him?
I've had an eye on him for some time now, because when you see a 14-year-old training with a first team, you kind of keep an eye on him. And then he's also, when he was 13, I think roughly 14, he was having loads of trials in the Bundesliga, but obviously you can't sign for a club until you're 16, even in Europe. So he's had to buy this time, and it's actually his birthday today, as we're recording on the 26th of October. So he's just turned 17, so he's still a very young player. And like I say, when someone of the agency that recruited him, someone of their stature signs you, who don't normally tend to go for talent outside of the main European countries like France, Germany, England, and Italy. So if someone has seen potential in you from that agency, I mean, that says a lot about him. And every single time I watched him at youth level, he's especially in the national team where Hungary have played quite a few good teams when I watched him, Serbia and the Netherlands, he really stood out in those games. And I think he kind of has it all. Like, he's got the defensive work great as well. He's a very good presser. He's got the speed, and like I say, technically he's blessed with very quick lightning feet. And when it comes to goal, he's got the composure as well. Like, his first senior goal at 16 years of age came in kind of the final minutes in the Hungarian league, and it came from a chance where he kind of just latched onto a loose ball and ran like half the length of the pitch and went one-on-one with the goalkeeper, and he finished it was quite a composed finish. And I think he's definitely probably one of the best Hungarian talents I've seen since Dominic Szoboszlai, and definitely the best at MTK since a very long time.
Wow.
That is big praise. Dominic Szoboszlai. Ben, I was wondering, obviously you've kept an eye on him for quite some time. What would you think is probably the best move for him in terms of like his development in the next stage? Do you think he's better off staying in Hungary, or do you think he's better off moving elsewhere? What do you think?
Well, I think right now, I think he made the good decision to stay in the summer. Basel were interested. Basel had someone from his age group who is only playing in their youth squads at the moment, Jean Borg. So I think he's better off playing in senior football. Yeah, you learn a lot more. But if someone like Salzburg is interested, and there is a lot of talk in Hungary that they are, following Dominik Szoboszlai's route, it wouldn't be a bad one, because I've been looking at Liefering's squad, and they don't really have a lot of wingers in their team at the moment. So he'd definitely have room to break into that side. And the Austrian second division is still a senior league where he can rack up senior minutes. And obviously with Salzburg as well, like, there's a clear path into the first team from Liefering, and they're very good at promoting their young players. So that's the kind of club he needs to join. I think moving to a bigger club just so he can play sort of minutes in their academy or under 23s or whatever is not going to be the best for his development. He needs to be playing senior football, and this decision of when he moves and who he moves to is going to be an important one, because that will ultimately decide his future, I think.
Yeah, definitely. I think going down the Red Bull path is probably a really, really good thing for him. And obviously, you know, because Dominic Szoboszlai, he knows that there is evidence of it being a very, very helpful move for him. And like moving somewhere in terms of at least moving to the Bundesliga would be incredible for him. Playing at that level as well. Yeah,
I think as well, it's obviously very close to Hungary, so he doesn't need to move too far away. And I think as well, his dad was a former Hungarian international who played over 300 games in Hungary's top flight. So he's got good guidance behind him as well, and they'll make sure they manage his career right.
Yeah. Well, you heard it here first. It's the next Szoboszlai, the moniker's been set. So it's a very exciting path to kind of be at the start of. For my first pick, we're going to take a detour away from the European game and head to the Brazilian Serie A and Santos specifically, where we're going to discuss Kaique. Now, not to be confused with the 18-year-old Kaique who Man City have just bought from Fluminense, actually made his debut in the EFL Youth Trophy last night. This Kaique is a centre-back, and he was born in 2004. He's 6 foot and 160 pounds already, despite being just 17. And he's playing in a pretty poor Santos side. They're just 1 point above 19th place Grêmio. But they have only conceded 34 goals in their 27 league matches, so it's not it's by no means an abject defensive unit. It's quite the bottom end of the Brazilian Serie A is quite tightly contested, so that, you know, that might not be the fairest reflection that they're so close to the drop. Of their 27 league games, Kaique started 9 of them, and he featured in 10 of Santos's Copa Libertadores campaign earlier this year. In fact, in his Libertadores debut, he actually scored the winner from centre-back. And he was, at the time, he was 17 years old, 1 month and 56 days. So he is the youngest Brazilian to ever score in the Copa Libertadores, which is it's quite remarkable, really, when you think about the kind of the storied history of that competition, that a 17-year-old centre-back should be the youngest Brazilian is quite incredible. But looking at Kaique's numbers, you wouldn't know he was 17. He possesses all the kind of the metrics and the performance of a centre back who's much older than 17, really. So he's already this season he's completing over 60 passes a game at a 91% success rate, which I know in itself can be quite an arbitrary stat, but I suppose for a 17-year-old centre-back to be that reliable and consistent in his distribution is really impressive. And within those 60 passes, there are 3 successful long balls per 90. And watching him, he very much likes that kind of when he's given time and space on the ball, he likes kind of not dithering on it, but holding the ball for a long time and wedging those little lofted diagonal passes into the attacking third. He's got a really nice, clean swing of his foot when he delivers them, which I suppose in the modern game is quite for a centre back to be rated. They have to kind of look the part, the kind of the Rolls Royce kind of cliche. So yeah, he's very good on the ball, And then defensively, he makes an incredible number of interceptions for a centre back. He's currently making 4.66 interceptions per 90, which for a centre back is kind of insane. Like, that's a huge man. You can look at the Brazilian game and the way that centre backs are expected to be called into action as a reason that that's so high. You know, in the Premier League, for example, you rarely see a centre back really go above 4 tackles and interceptions per 90, but he's at nearly 5 interceptions alone, and that kind of showed his aptitude for reading passes and cutting off kind of opposition attacks. Not the downside, but something that does need to be acknowledged: he does make over 2 fouls per game, and his aerial success rate is only 43%, which is not optimal, I suppose, for the European game. But again, he's just 17, and that more physical side of the game will come. And when he's blessed so physically to be, like I say, 6 foot and 160 pounds at 17, I think that is just the thing that will come very naturally with more specific coaching and just an improvement in the game around him. He does, when you watch him, he does appear to kind of thrive in the more helter-skelter kind of end-to-end style of Brazilian football. He's incredibly quick across the ground, especially when he's kind of chasing back towards his own goal. You know, an attacker breaks the offside trap and counters, leaving Kaiki behind. He's very quick and able to hunt him down and kind of swing his foot around and win what looked to be quite dramatic tackles. This is probably down to the nature of the Brazilian game, that as a centre-back, he's having to run back towards his own goal quite a lot. And I imagine if he was to move to Europe, he would probably be defending counter-attacks but facing them rather than running in behind them. So that's the part of his game that we haven't really seen yet. To kind of set an example, I suppose he reminds me quite a lot of Ben Godfrey in that reading of space. And kind of physically, like, he's tall, and he's, when Ben Godfrey came up through with Norwich, he looked very much like Kaiki does now, like kind of tall, quite broad-chested, but not quite filled out now. And you look at the incredible specimen that Ben Godfrey is, as the athlete that he is, then you imagine Kaiki will develop into that in a matter of years as well. And yeah, also likes to dribble and carry the ball out. Again, in the European game, where there might be more of a coordinated opposition press, this will probably be challenged a bit more. But it's very promising to see a young, again, a 17-year-old centre-back being so brave and courageous on the ball. Over the summer, there was supposedly interest from the likes of Bayern and Man City. And given that Man City have a history of picking up young Brazilian talent, look at Douglas Luiz when he was coming through the system, and then the other Kaiki earlier this year, then it wouldn't surprise me at all to see them go in for another Kaiki. And with him, he's already valued at £4 million on Transfermarkt. Again, for a 17-year-old, that's pretty insane. So yeah, I can't imagine he'll stick around in Brazil for much longer.
That's really interesting, Tom. Yeah, what do you think about? So, like you mentioned, Manchester City and Bayern are sort of interested in him, and given the fact that he's still really young, do you think it's best that he sort of hones his abilities in Brazil for a couple more years, or do you think he's already very, very good for his age group, and in that he can possibly look for a move abroad and maybe develop his skill set elsewhere?
Oh, I mean, he's incredibly developed for his age and for the position he's in. But kind of some of the factors that I'll discuss, like his lack of aerial ability. I think the fact he has played a lot of minutes this season for, you know, nine league starts as a 17-year-old centre back is a lot. But it's not quite enough to warrant, you know, the likes of. And what we have to remember is if Man City did buy him, he would almost certainly be loaned straight back out to Brazil.
Definitely.
To develop and kind of hone himself into the kind of a European standard centre back, or even like, you know, like see if Arsenal's situation with William Saliba, where they buy him and, you know, 3 years down the line they haven't actually played him. That would probably happen with Kaiki. And the fact is, even if he did come back 3-4 years later, he'd still only be 21, 22 and years off his peak. So I think the only sense in bringing someone purchasing him now would be just to beat the rat race, because I imagine it will be, because I think that is the theme of buying these young Brazilian players, is teams will go and put the money down because they know the longer they leave it, the more they end up with kind of an arms race to try and sign them when their stock rises. You look at Brazil getting Real Madrid getting in there early with Vinicius and Rodrigo. I think that's happening more and more. And it wouldn't be the worst thing for him to be picked up by a Man City now, but he would have to spend more time in Brazil, or at least at a lower level than the Premier League or even a top five league, for that to be a worthwhile practice for such a young kid. Very exciting young centre back. And we'll head back to Ninad for his second choice of this.
Okay. So my second choice is we're going to the Serbian Youth League for this. We're going to Uroš Kabić, who is a 17-year-old. He's currently at Vojvodina. So he's a sort of a right. He's another wide forward that I've picked for this podcast, and yeah, he's currently playing in the youth league in Serbia. He's made 9 appearances so far this season. But what's particularly, you know, stood out about him is that he has already scored twice in the UEFA Conference League, UEFA Europa Conference League qualifiers for Vojvodina. So in those 4 appearances, he scored twice, which is a very historic feat in itself for a 17-year-old from Serbia. So, yeah, as I do consider myself sort of the in-house numbers guy at FTF. So let me throw a bit of light on his very, very impressive numbers this season. So so you have to bear in mind that this is still very, very early in the season. He's played about close to 400 minutes this year. So just to quickly give you an idea of the kind of player he is, he leads the league in terms of progressive runs per 90. So in the youth league, he averages about 2.7 progressive runs per 90, which is incredible. That just gives you an indication that he's just an incredibly direct player. But also from what I've watched of him in terms of his video and some of the footage that I've been able to see of him, is that he's quite happy to play one-twos with players, and he's quite happy to, even though he's happy to release the ball on certain occasions, he's also a very demanding player. He wants the ball to feet to sort of progress it himself. I feel like that's very impressive of such a young player to want to take responsibility of the ball and try to progress it up the field. So in that sense, I was very impressed with him. Again, so he's a wide forward, so naturally he's, you know, you have to look at the kind of his dribbling numbers and his crossing numbers, which are fortunately very good. So he's averaging about 5.3 dribbles per 90 this season, and crossing the ball nearly about 1.8 times per 90. But yeah, even though he's, you know, he's crossing the ball a healthy number of times per game, I feel like his best work comes when he is sort of cutting inside in the half spaces, because yeah, when he's, although he's a right-sided attacker, he's primarily left-footed, so he does his best work when he's sort of cutting inside into the half spaces, maybe releasing the ball out wide for the overlapping fullback to cross the ball, or maybe releasing a player in space himself, maybe making a nice through pass. So he's got all of these different qualities about him, and that sort of makes him a much more exciting prospect. So yeah, he's still very, very young in his career, and it's hard to sort of gauge how far he could go. But he's certainly one of it's definitely one player to keep an eye on, and could possibly be part of Serbia's next sort of golden generation. As we know, they won the FIFA Under 17 World Cup fairly recently. That's definitely something for him to, you know, aspire to, I think. And yeah, in the future, we'll probably see him, you know, featuring much more frequently in the first team of Vojvodina.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, he's already played 9 games for Vojvodina this season. He stood out to me when I first watched him in a Hungary under 17 game against Serbia. And he got an assist and a goal in that game. And what I really liked about him is he's a proper sort of Serbian archetypal player. He's very physical. He's got pace, speed, and he's good in one versus one situations as well. He's got a good shot on him. And he's very fearless when he plays. He's got that mentality. Probably stems from the fact that he's been in Vojvodina's first team or in and around it since he was 16. And the composure he showed to score his first goal in the UEFA Conference League qualifiers, I believe, when he was running for own goal in a one-on-one situation in the last minute to score a winner with that chip finish. I mean, that takes a special kind of player to do that. I think the only question mark I have about him is where he will end up, in which position, because he's quite tall for a winger. I think he's just above 6 foot or 6 foot, so that's quite a tall winger, and he's been playing a lot in the central forward position as well for Vojvodina this season and last season, and I watched a bit of him in pre-season because he was scoring quite a lot of goals in pre-season for Vojvodina, and he looks like someone who can also play in central roles as well. And it will be interesting to see how he develops as he grows and sort of, which position will be his permanent position in future seasons ahead. He's a very interesting player. And I was surprised he wasn't included in the Guardian Next Gen list. Samad Bazdar was. He's also like him and Bazdar. For that 2004 Serbia generation, they're both ones to watch for sure.
Just to kind of paint a picture here, Nenad, is there a player in particular that kind of is comparable that you could kind of liken him to that you see similarities with?
I mean, I can't really think of anyone off the top of my head because Ben says he's a very sort of, you know, interesting profile in that he's really tall, but he's, you know, also he plays centrally, he plays wide, and he's sort of like Ben said, he's the perfect sort of Serbian archetype player. I suppose if I was to compare him to someone, Ben, I'm sorry, I'm sort of blanking out on a name, but Ben, do you have someone in mind that you could sort of compare him to?
I mean, he's not as explosive as Iron Robin, but there are definitely kind of shades of Iron Robin. I don't think he's got the pace of Iron Robin, but the way he likes to cut in, kind of reminds me of Robin.
Interesting. Yeah, I'll take that. Yeah, Iron Robin is a good shot.
Ben, how about you for your next selection?
Yeah, so I've gone with Daniel Šamek of Slavia Prague. He was another one who I was surprised wasn't included in the list because he's been playing a lot of games for Slavia this season, and he's been in really good form. He's a central defensive midfielder who also used to play as a centre-back, but his numbers, like, going forward this season have been really good as well. He scored 3 goals and he's registered 2 assists in the league. And I mean, in all fairness to him, the goals have all been from outside the box, long range efforts, and he seems to have a really good shot on him, which I think is a very interesting trait that he has as a CDM. And I think as well, what I like about him is he's very good positionally. He doesn't have the pace necessarily, but he makes up for it with the way he positions himself on the pitch. And on top of that, he has a really good passing range. So just like he's got a good shooting range, he's got a good passing range. He can hit long balls anywhere across the pitch. And he's an interesting player. I was surprised he wasn't included in the list, because I think given Slavia's track record of producing young players, he's definitely one to watch. It's interesting that he plays in the same position as Suchek. I wouldn't really necessarily compare the two, because I think they're different sort of players, but they both have the height. They both started out as CDM, so I can see why some people would make those comparisons.
So being a Czech midfielder, does this mean we're going to see him at West Ham in the next couple of years with Alex Kral and Thomas Suchek?
Sorry, what was the question?
I just said, seeing as he's a Czech midfielder brought through the Slavia Prague system, does this mean we'll see him at West Ham in the next year or two?
I mean, you never know. There's obviously Tufel as well. Like, there's a lot of Czech players who end up going there. But I think, surely they've got enough Czech CDMs now. So maybe it's time for those Czech CDMs from Slavia Prague to move somewhere else. I think I can see him doing really well in the Bundesliga. I think for now, he definitely needs to have like a full season at Slavia Prague, where he just kind of adjusts to senior football and everything. And then, I can see him moving next summer easily. I think he's already shown in these few games. I think he's played around 14 league games this season, that he's kind of already at a level where he can make the next step up, and he's quite comfortable already in the Czech division.
It's an area that the Czech national team are clearly very very blessed with as well. Do you think national team honours might be kind of conceivable in the near future?
Well, they were really impressive at the Euros, weren't they? And Patrick Schick is in very good form still, and he's not that old himself. You've got Suchet and Adam Plozet coming through. I think Zima at centre-back, he's moved to Italy, maybe hasn't got as many minutes as you've liked. But yeah, there's a lot of promising prospects coming through in the Czech Republic. And I wouldn't say it's a golden generation, because I remember a golden generation of Barros and Rosický and Čech and
Koller.
Nedved.
Koller, yeah.
That was quite some team, and it'll take a lot of beating to, sort of surpass their achievements. I mean, in the 90s, the Czech Republic made the Euros final, and then they made the semi-final in 2004. So it'll be a difficult one to surpass, but it's definitely a very promising generation, and a generation that the Czech Republic should be excited about.
Absolutely, yeah, and assuming that the young Czech midfielder doesn't take a detour from Suchek and Kral, we can expect to see him at the London Stadium by 2022, I imagine.
Yeah, I already have a feeling David Moyes is probably going to tune into the podcast and see what Ben has to say about him.
I mean, we know he's a listener already, so we apologise to Slavia Prague there for that publicity. So we're going to kind of round off this podcast. We're talking about some of the ones you missed out on the 2003 Next Generation list. And this is partly because my final pick wasn't, in fact, born in 2004, but was born in 2003. So for my clerical error, we've had to add in a whole new section. So I do apologise for that. So my final pick from born in 2003, not 2004, is Malo Gusto. I hope that's the correct pronunciation there, who is a French right back playing for Lyon at the moment. 18 years old, made his debut in January this year against Saint-Étienne. And he's part of the Lyon Academy kind of graduate honour roll with Rayan Cherki. So he's kind of part of this very talented, very promising batch of young Lyon players. This season he's made 4 starts and he's come off the bench twice in Ligue 1. This has partly been when he's been rotated in and out with club captain Léo Dubois, who's obviously the starting right back. And I think it's fair to say that were it not for Dubois' kind of permanency in that right back position, then Gusto could perhaps have expected to have even more game time. So impressive has he been this season. So across 2021, he's only played 509 minutes, which does show he's kind of being rotated in and out, being very carefully managed. And the sample size is therefore small, unlikely to kind of skew our view of him. But what's impressive about Gusto is the range of different metrics that he impresses in. So going forward, as is expected, the modern fullback, Gusto is currently hitting 0.19 expected assists per 90. So that's an expected assist every 5 games, which for a fullback is incredibly impressive. And this puts him in the 93rd percentile of all top 5 league fullbacks. Again, the caveat coming that he has only played 500 minutes, but kind of what I was kind of discussing with Kaiki earlier, that if for someone so young to be doing that in limited minutes, can't really be used as a stick to bash them with, and instead should be kind of seen as a kind of bravery to take the opportunity given to them and really try and blow away the competition. He's also attempting nearly 71 passes per 90, which for a fullback is it's wild, really. 2.3 touches in the penalty area, which is incredibly high for fullback. And he's a mix of attacking threat and defensive energy, stamina. He's kind of got the whole package. So defensively, he's currently making 19.27 pressures per 90. So we're kind of looking at Vladimir Soufal levels of kind of stamina and harrying his opposition winger and fullback. It's incredibly high for someone who's playing so little minutes. And this puts him in the 96th percentile among all fullbacks. And then perhaps the most impressive number to come out of Gusto's Arsenal check sheet, whatever you want to call it, is that he's making over 6 tackles and interceptions per 90, as well as 3 blocks per 90. So you kind of put that together and you paint a picture of a very energetic, aggressive fullback, who puts his body on the line, is fearless in his chasing and his defensive work, and is overall just pretty fun to watch. I think arguably one of his most impressive performances has been in Lyon's 2-1 defeat to PSG back in, I believe it's September. And he was coming up against a left flank of Neymar and Nuno Mendes. So, you know, no easy task for any fullback. And I imagine had he played, then Léo Dubois would have struggled competing with that level of pace and aggression. Yet Gusto dealt with it admirably. He was strong and brave in his passing, first and foremost. He was holding the ball kind of bravely and passing infield to combining with the central midfielders rather than kind of allowing himself to be boxed in and then punting it long. He was involved in build up and quite smart and intricate levels of passing build up, rather than just taking the easy option as you see from some young fullbacks. And then when he won the ball, he was something that was very seems it might seem quite obvious, but when he was winning the ball, he was taking one or two very, very quick touches to get away from the player he just has possessed to kind of give a bit of clearance, which can, I suppose, sound a bit obvious that as a thing you would do. But when you kind of got when those players are Mbappe and Neymar, being able to get that bit of clearance from someone that is likely not going to track back and pressure you shows a bit of, for me, shows a bit of kind of astute game awareness and a bit of understanding of who his opposition is. And he did it multiple times. I thought it was a very impressive showing against, an absolute juggernaut of a team that, all right, might not be functioning completely at the moment, but for an 18-year-old filling in for a bit of a club legend at right back, most would probably crumble under that kind of pressure. So yeah, very impressive, very fun to watch, and I'd expect Gusto to nail down a starting position at right back very soon. Should he not end up venturing outside of Lyon in the coming years?
He sounds really, really interesting, Tom. I have to ask you this. I'm just looking at his heat map now, and he seems really, like, very incredibly active alongside the entire right flank, like top to bottom. He's all over the place. From what you've watched of him, does he remind you a little bit of a young Hakimi, if you will, in the way that he sort of goes about his work on the right?
I can kind of see why you would say that by looking at where he is active and where a lot of his touches are. For me, he reminds me of more of a conventional right back than Hakimi, because Hakimi even has all the hallmarks of a wing back playing at full back, or even as a winger playing as a wing back. His explosive attacking output has always been his USP. Whereas I think for Malo Gusto, there appears to be more of a, I don't want to say he's not more of a complete package than Hakimi, but if you take an 18-year-old Hakimi, I think Gusto appears to be more of a defensive contributor and I suppose more responsible defensively than Hakimi ever was required to be, because Hakimi would play intermittently for Real Madrid, and then he obviously went to Dortmund, where he was given the complete freedom of that right flank. So I suppose I'm trying to think who he kind of does remind me of. I think there are certain aspects of Kyle Walker in there. Kyle Walker in his current state. Imagine the Kyle Walker in his current state as an 18-year-old. That kind of makes sense, because that kind of the ability for Walker to move into midfield and be solid and reliable in a passing sense is something that wasn't actually then, not even under Pochettino at Spurs, really. That's something that Guardiola really groomed out of him, groomed into him, I should say. And I think Gusto appears to show a bit of that even now as an 18-year-old. So yeah, I would say he's more Kyle Walker-esque than Hakimi, like, if that kind of answers your question. But yeah, no, and seeing as I did break the podcast rules of inviting a 2003 born player onto the discussion, I'll throw the conversation out to you two to suggest any others from the previous year's list that you felt could or should have been included by the Guardian.
I'm just double checking, but I'm pretty sure Kacper Kozlowski was not included in the 2021,
That's incredible.
the 2020 one, yeah, last year's one, which was for the 2003 generation. And obviously, he's this summer he became the youngest ever player to appear at the Euros, and I think it's quite a surprise that he wasn't included, because I remember watching the Sarensky Cup in Poland where England were competing, and this was back in around 2019, I believe, September of 2019, and England had an incredible team. They had Jamal Musiala, Jude Bellingham, Harvey Elliott, Louis Barry of Aston Villa, all in the squad, all in the starting 11, I should say. And then in the squad, you had the likes of Aaron Ramsey, Aston Villa as well, and Liam Delap. So, yeah, it was probably one of the best like young English teams around, maybe with the exception of the 2000 born generation. And Poland put up a good fight against them, and one of the star players for Poland was Kacper Kozlowski, who scored a goal. It was a the game ended 2-2, and Kozlowski scored a goal, and he was kind of involved in the other Polish goal as well. And he really stood out to me, and I think he looked like a player who was on par with Musiala, Bellingham, and Elliot in that game. Obviously, 2 years have gone by since, and Bellingham and Musiala are doing it in the Bundesliga, and but Kozlowski has had he's faced a very serious injury. He was involved in a car accident which kind of ruled him out for over 6 months, in the beginning of 2021. Up until then, he was making good progress, and I think it's credit to him that he did manage to fight back after his injury and be involved in the Polish senior national team, and make his debut in the Euros as well. And this season especially, I think he's come on leaps and bounds. I remember looking at a statistic a few maybe a week ago or something, that he was averaging over 9 dribbles per 90 in the Ekstraklasa from central midfield, which is pretty mad for a central midfielder to be making that many dribbles per 90. And yeah, he in terms of his goal contributions per 90 as well, he's averaging a goal contribution every other game, over every other game, I should say. He's got 3 goals and 3 assists in the Ekstraklasa this season. And yeah, he's been linked with even Liverpool, among others. He's been linked with a host of clubs, and I think it's only a matter of time until he does make the move. He only recently turned 18, so he's still very, very young. But he's got all the hallmarks to be really excellent central midfielder, sort of a box-to-box type, because he's quite a physical player. He's got the height, but at the same time, technically, he's very gifted as well. Like I say, someone who makes 9 dribbles per 90 has to be very technically adept, and he is. And on top of that, he's got an eye for goal as well, whether it's headers or getting into the box on the end of a loose ball, or even long range efforts. He's got a lot in his locker, and yeah, I think he's one of the best Polish talents in some time, and he's someone who I can see sort of get into the level of someone like Błaszczykowski, and maybe not Lewandowski, because Lewandowski is one of a kind, but definitely a Błaszczykowski and a Piszczek level player, who can play in one of the sort of upper tiers of Europe's upper echelon, sort of like a Borussia Dortmund, for example.
Could you imagine a world where Kozlowski and Jude Bellingham will occupy a pitch again, but this time on the in the same jersey? Although I imagine, would you say he could be a perfect replacement for when Bellingham inevitably makes that 100 million, whatever it is, move? Where do you, are there similarities between the two?
I think there are. There definitely are. They got. I can definitely see him being a replacement, and I think Borussia Dortmund would do well. Like they should be looking at him as a replacement because he does have that. He does have everything that kind of Bellingham has as well. It's. I know recently, Boniek, the former Juventus and Polish legend, said that. He was beyond Bellingham and Musiala. I mean, it's hard to tell because he is only playing in the extra clash at the moment, so you can't really say whether he's right or not. Because in order for to make a proper judgment and a proper conclusion about his potential and his ceiling, we'll have to see him break into one of the top five leagues. And I think Dortmund wouldn't be a bad place to start because, like I said, they had the like. Dortmund will always have patience with their younger players, and he would have the room to kind of hone his game and adjust to a higher level, which I think he's definitely ready for. He's definitely standing out in the Polish league at the moment, so I think it's only a matter of time until he makes the next step. But he needs to be careful as well where he goes, and Dortmund probably wouldn't be a bad choice.
Cool. So very exciting to hear. What about you, Ninad? Have you got any 2003 should have beens or?
Yeah, I mean, I do have one player which who I thought could have been a very interesting pick. He's Omar Sow. So he plays currently at New York Red Bulls. He recently signed his sort of first senior contract with the senior team. So until now he was in sort of their B team with Red Bulls 2 in the USL Championship. But yeah, looks of his numbers and from what little footage I've seen of him, he's a very interesting player, really really good, primarily a goal scorer, and someone who seems like he could consistently deliver at a high level, because for the past 2 seasons he's averaged, he scored 7 goals in 2020. And even in the sort of in the championship this year, he's already had 7 goals in about 2,000 minutes and 3 assists. So 10 goal contributions overall for a 20-year-old is not bad at all. And yeah, I think he could be a very interesting player to look out for. Another player that I found was worth mentioning was from Norway. So talking about CD Jatta, hope I'm pronouncing that right. Yeah, so he's currently at Vålerenga, and he's sort of broken out into the first team this season. So there are a lot of comparisons to be made in terms of his playing style to Osame Sharawi, who's currently at obviously in the first team, and he's making a big name for himself. He's quite well known now as sort of a very exciting entity in the Vålerenga first team. And the expectation in Norway is that he's definitely going to try and follow in his footsteps. Though I feel Jatta is more of a, I'd say he's more of a striker than Sharawi is, or Sharawi is sort of involved in sort of all phases of playing in an attacking sense. But Jatta definitely feels like he could benefit long term from being more of a striker, and possibly sort of limit himself and maybe try to focus on being more that goal scoring outlet for the team. He's definitely got the pace for it, and he's very exciting to watch. So far in the Eliteserien, he's got 17 appearances. He's scored twice. He's been substituted on, come off the bench quite a few times. He primarily plays in the youth league, which is the PostNordligaen. He scored twice there as well. And yeah, he's definitely one of the more exciting players alongside Sharawi at Vålerenga to keep an eye on in the coming seasons.
Yeah, it's very, very exciting to hear. Ben, I was just wondering if you had any final picks, any final comment you wanted to make about 2003 player that you had in mind or Ninad had mentioned?
Not particularly. I think Kozlowski was the biggest surprise for me in that list. So I'll just stick with him, I think. And some interesting names mentioned by Ninad as well.
Yeah, Kozlowski.
But I should say, I'm probably going to watch Kozlowski pretty soon. I'm going to be, I think he's is he part of the under-21 team at the moment at Liverpool?
Oh, he's not at Liverpool at the moment, Kozlowski.
That's Musilowski, isn't it?
Musilowski, yeah.
Oh, sorry. Oh, my God. I've got the names mixed up. Sorry. Yeah, never mind.
Yeah, you'll get to watch Liverpool on the 21 team.
I will. Yeah, I'm heading down to Port Vale next month, where they're going to face them. I think it's in the Football League Trophy, which is officially called the Papa John's Trophy, if I'm not mistaken.
Musilowski was involved in that Sirensky Cup game as well, alongside Kozlowski.
I'll watch Musilowski.
And he's meant to be, I believe Musilowski's meant to be involved in the Liverpool first team squad against Preston today.
Brilliant. Okay, nice.
Very exciting. Yeah. Yeah, so I suppose that kind of wraps up our deep dive into the missed out next generation names, who are hopefully, based off our own judgments and analysis, should do well to push the names that are already on the list and arguably should have been on the list in the first place. So thank you to Ben and Ninad for your insight and wisdom once again. Have you got anything you'd like to kind of finish off the pod with or plug before we head off?
Yeah, just in terms of some admin, I think we have a very interesting inside story coming up on the website, and it's definitely something that people should look out for. And yeah, we're very excited about the player that we're going to review in the coming days. So that should be good.
And hopefully we'll start making these podcasts more of a regular thing in the future. In the weeks, because they're a good way to for us to chuck all our analysis into one condensed space. So hopefully you enjoyed it, and I'll say goodbye to you both now, and we'll see you all soon.